Still on the search of that one true love? On the limbo in this crazy world of dating, marriage, relationships? Well, listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Relationship Podcast, your one-stop podcast for everything about relationships.
Hi there. Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, John Johnson, and in this episode, we are going to talk about the White Knight Syndrome, when the woman is the breadwinner, and being in the friend zone.
Check out the show that's built on the MMA. From the UFC to extreme cage fighting, they got the fights covered. Check out the GSMC MMA podcast. Get the latest news on past or upcoming fights. Join us as we talk to and about some of the biggest names in the MMA, past, present, and future. When it's the fight game, there's just one show to check out. GSMCpodcast.com/MMA-podcast. Don't forget to like them on Facebook and follow them on Twitter. Visit GSMCpodcast.com for more info.
Hi there. Welcome to Golden State Media Concepts Relationships Podcast. And I'm your host, John Johnson. And in this episode, we're going to talk about when the woman is the breadwinner, the White Knight Syndrome, and being in the friend zone. When I talk about the friend zone, what I'm referring to is when you have that person that you have sort of had an interest in, and but it stays in that state. It's not really romance. You know, you may have met them in a group setting. You may have known them from school, met them at yoga, met them in the supermarket, and you just kind of have, it sort of clicks a little bit. It sort of works. And, you know, if you want that to go to the next level, that is, you sort of being exclusive, where it's just the two of you, you can kind of be a couple, you know, that takes a risk. And, you know, you put your feelings out there. Well, if it's not kind of given back in the same way, you know, it's sort of kind of awkward. You know, you're kind of thinking, well, are we moving forward here? Where are we? You know, what's happening? You might be in the friend zone. Now, it obviously merits some discussion. You got to tell the person, hey, you know, I was wondering if we can kind of talk about the relationship here and deciding what you want. Well, if the feedback comes to that, you know, I don't really want to change this. I kind of like just hanging out, or so to speak. Well, now you got to make a decision. Do you just kind of wait this out? You know, you just kind of keep things status quo. You keep going out as friends and having pizza and maybe going to the movies or just and hanging out with the other groups of friends, or should you move on? Obviously, that's your personal choice. I mean, if you're looking for a relationship, you know, the friend zone is not where you want to be. Now, you can kind of put yourself in that position when you don't have expectations. Because if you don't make your feelings known, if you don't say something to the effect of, hey, you know, I'm actually looking for a significant other, and discussing it at that level, because people will give you a clear indication if they don't want to be in a relationship. But, you know, you can kind of work on that. Because you have people that are a little gun-shy. They don't want to necessarily jump into a new relationship because the old one left them sort of in tatters. So the new one, it just might not be the time is right. So you might be in a friend zone for that reason. And you might be in the friend zone because they just don't have feelings for you. I mean, it's kind of important to know something about the background of the person we're talking about, because if they just have a history of not ever being in relationships, well, you're not going to get anything anyway. That's a lost cause. You just might as well just stay friends and or move on and look for somebody else. Now, the friend zone's not a bad place. Because as I shared, you know, you've got an individual who just got out of a relationship. They got a little bit of repair work that they're going to have to do before they're probably fit to be in a new relationship. And you don't want to be the rebound, because the thing is, what I've learned about rebounds is if you're the first one after they broke up, you're probably not going to work out. They need to take some time to heal, and you need to give them that space. If you happen to be in their life at the time and something of a reliable person, you know, you kind of, you might be getting bonus points because you're showing your character. And that's an important thing to be able to do, especially for a person who's gotten out of a relationship, because it wouldn't have ended if it had been all good, you see. So having character is, that gives you an opportunity to do that. But the thing about the friend zone and getting placed into that, it's not romantic. You know, it's sort of like the light on the telephone that's on hold, and you're hoping for something down the road. So you got to kind of give yourself some criteria here. How long do you want to wait? Because there are certainly other opportunities out there. I mean, if you're in your mind that this is the next greatest person in the world to be with, then you might decide to give it some time and continue to enjoy that person and have a good time with them. But if that person is giving you the clear indication that it's not going to go any further, you probably should move on and find somebody else that you're more compatible with. Because that's basically a situation. If you go to the grocery store, the shelf is empty. There is nothing there for you. And better that you find that out and learn it, deal with it, move on, than just to keep hanging out. Because for what it's worth, if you want more, then you're going to have to go out and get it. And again, we're talking about the friend zone. Here's something that many of you probably come across, but and you wonder what to do about it. Let's say you have a friend, they have a partner, and you find that that partner has shown an interest in you. What do you do? Do you blow them out of the water? Do you run back to your friend and say, hey, you know, guess what just happened here? I think it really merits you pumping your brakes and give consideration that maybe you might have misunderstood something here. Now, I'm not talking about the overt somebody's coming on to you, but if somebody seems to be extraordinary, if somebody seems to be nice, and you're kind of wondering, is this personal interest here, or is this just the person being nice? I think the thing to do in that situation is you sort of say, hey, Janet, I mean, I think it's great that you and Bob are good for each other. I'm really glad that you know, we're all friends. And that move sort of puts it out there that you recognize that Janet is with that guy and that you're not going to ruin that, come between that, show any sort of inappropriateness. And if you may have had the possibility of misreading Janet's nice intentions, it won't put an ugly spin on it and create something embarrassing. So that's just a little piece of etiquette for you, that just in that conversation, you just bring up the name of the two people in the relationship and that how happy you are for them. And that sort of puts you in the clear. It sort of makes it clear that you're not wanting to come between them. And I'm also wanting to make it clear, too, there's a lot of things people say and do when they're under the influence of something, be it drugs or alcohol. And they may say something that they don't ever mean if they were level-headed or if they were in their right mind. And you don't want to ever take something like that too far, because you're going to wind up having to deal with damage control. And you don't want to be in the middle of two people when they're having a problem like that, because it's really not yours to deal with. I mean, you can be supportive without getting in the middle of it. Another thing I wanted to bring up is, this comes quite often in conversations about dating. It's when to have sex in a date. Some people, it's abstinence. You know, they have religious beliefs, and they just don't believe sex before marriage. Others say wait 3 dates. Some say 3 months, 6 months. Some say after matrimony. That's kind of relates to that abstinence thing. And think about what it is that you want. Now, I've heard from women who have said that who may believe that if they have sex with a guy that they have a relationship, or that a guy loves them, or that a guy wants them. And that's not necessarily the case. Sex to a guy is a lot different than sex to a woman. And I know this has been talked about, but I'm bringing it up because that conversation came back to me in a discussion not too long ago. And it was really all about the interpretation of what being physically intimate means between two people. Now, you obviously should have a conversation about what it means, but in the case of how long to wait, that's certainly a personal choice. What has your experience been? You got to think about what's the perception of the other person when you become physically intimate. And what agreement do you have? Think about it. Are we exclusive? I mean, certainly with this day and age of sexually transmitted diseases, having a monogamous partner is the safer way to go. But some people treat sex as though it's recreational, and it's just a part of what they do when they're with somebody, and it could be several somebodies. You know, when you're not monogamous, then, well, that's the opposite of monogamy. It'd be with several, or the potential to be with several. Whatever you do, you want to make the decision for yourself ahead of time, because deciding these things after you've gotten involved with somebody comes with a great deal of risk, because some people get physically involved with somebody for all the wrong reasons. One, they think it's going to keep a person, and it generally doesn't. If you're in a committed relationship and you're having sexual issues, well, then that's probably something that needs to be addressed with a therapist or a doctor. But I'm talking about those in this circumstance. I'm talking about those people who are single and who are trying to make the decision to take it to that level. Again, this is something you have to give a lot of thought to, because we all interpret that differently. And because of that, communication is the key. Another something I wanted to touch on has to do with interracial relationships. It was very taboo. It's something that's been talked about in various cultures. But now it can come to mean lots of different cultures. America is a melting pot. We have Japanese, we have Korean, we have people from, Philippine heritage, we have people of a Latin heritage. And when you start having all of those different ethnicities in this country, then the potential to date somebody outside of your own culture is very great. College is a very good place to meet people from different backgrounds. You have people from various countries, different states, different cities, all showing up in the same place. And the college experience is generally a pretty good place to break down barriers, so that when you meet people, things that you may have grown up listening to, you can dispel a lot of myths, a lot of rumors. And basically, people are people. And it has less to do with their skin color than it does with their character. Carrying this forward, the interracial relationship, when you meet someone and you find that you're attracted to them and they're of a different race, there are people still who have a problem with that, because they see skin color as an indication of someone's wealth or value. And if in your experience, you are dealing with, let's say, family members that may have a bias against that, that's going to affect you, because you probably won't feel comfortable about bringing your mate around those people. And then there's, in some communities, the stigma of being with somebody of a different culture. And that can be very daunting. And by the way, when you become committed to that person, you have children, or you may have children, and, you know, the children of interracial parents, now many people say that they're very beautiful because there's this exotic blend of skin and hair and eye color and stuff like that. I mean, that's all part of the outside. But, you know, I think about the richness of meeting someone of a different culture and embracing that knowledge and applying that and being an ambassador, if you will, for being in a relationship with someone of a different culture. It doesn't have to always lead to kids and matrimony, but it's nice to be able to get outside of your own comfort zone. And I think about that. Next up, I'm going to talk about the pain of loving someone when it is one-sided. It's called unrequited love. And we'll be back.
Tired of searching the vast jungle of podcasts? Now listen close and hear this out. There's a podcast network that covers just about everything that you've been searching.
Hey!
The Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network is here. Nothing less than a podcast bliss with endless hours of podcast coverage. From news, sports, music, fashion, cooking, entertainment, fantasy, football, and so much more. So stop lurking around and go straight out to the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. Guaranteed to fill that podcast itch. Whatever it may be, visit us at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and download us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Google Play.
Unrequited love. It's basically, I would describe it as a romantic feeling sort of experience that's only one-sided. Oftentimes, these kinds of relationships start off as being platonic. You know, you got a couple of friends, they've been hanging out, they've known each other for a long time, and one person gets to feeling like, hey, you know, I might want to take this to the next level. And platonic is simple, just for those that aren't quite sure with the term, it just means it's non-sexual. That's what platonic is. It's just non-sexual. But when you have somebody that wants to take it to another level with the romance, meaning they want intimacy, most likely physical intimacy, then, and it's not returned, well, now we're in an awkward place because it's, do you sit and wait for this person to change their mind or do you move on? I mean, clearly, when you have an emotional experience with someone like that, it is very hard to let go. Letting go was not something we're used to doing. And, hey, you know, hanging on to certain things, I mean, that shows tenacity. That's a good thing. I mean, how many times have you worked for something, and the harder you worked for it, well, the better it felt when you got it. I mean, that's accomplishing something. And if everything was easy, would it be worth it? Well, when it comes to matters of the heart, now this takes a different spin, because this person who's not sharing that same emotional interest may have interests elsewhere. And that's not something that you can control. And this is just that odd, you know, push me, pull you kind of give and take nature of relationships. You know, we're talking about human emotions and feelings, and, you know, they don't always mirror what we expect. And that, in essence, is what happens in a platonic relationship. And it could be heart-wrenching because you might see yourself as the best person for that other individual, and you're just wanting to love them and give them all you are, and they just don't see it the same way. You know, that could lead to other issues. And at the top of the show, I talked about what's called the white knight syndrome. And it happens in cases like this. You go from being platonic to what the white knight does is the white knight tends to come into the experience of someone and they want to rescue them. And that's kind of an overview. But that person, the object of their affection, is somebody that seems to have something that needs to be fixed, whether it's they have car problems all the time, or they have problems with other family members, and the white knight wants to rush in and fix it all the time because they feel that I've got the perfect answer, I can throw money at this problem and fix it, or whatever. That what the white knight tends to do is tend to want to do these things because that for them, when they can be the rescuer, when they can fix things, it sort of affirms for them that sort of self-worth. And that is the crux of the white knight syndrome. The problem that comes up with this is that the white knight often doesn't realize that they're not handling their own business. They're out fixing someone else. They're out rescuing somebody else's problems, but they're not handling their own business. And they may be doing that because they don't have the, they can't. They don't know how, but they can fix somebody else's problems. Now imagine that. If you had a mechanic that worked on your car but couldn't fix his own, you're not going to have a whole lot of confidence in that. Well, the white knight tends to be an illustration of something like that, and it's magnified. Well, the thing that is underneath this, and this is something that the white knight oftentimes doesn't consider because they're operating in the blind here. They think they're just driving on emotions. Well, here's what happens. A white knight sees the object of their affection and they're playing rescuer. Well, they don't realize that what's happening underneath here is they may have issues of abandonment. And they think by being the rescuer of somebody else, they're going to make them feel grateful for them being in their life. So if I, John, see Mary out there and I'm just wanting to be the best thing since the best guy that she's ever met, I'm over there every day. I'm raking her yard. I am fixing her car. I'm maybe even dropping her kids off at daycare just so that she doesn't have to do it today. And probably trying to give her advice on life and other matters of the heart. Well, I'm probably not handling my own business. But what underneath is I'm thinking I'm building good graces. I'm building points with her. And the idea is that when she finally comes around, she's going to see that I'm the best guy that she can be with. Well, you know what? That's what white knights do. But what white knights tend to forget is they have their own problems, which created that experience that they want to fix somebody else and not take care of their own. And like I say, they're just blind to it. So if you have this kind of person in your experience, take a look at yourself. Are you inviting this person to be in your life to try to be your rescuer? Because if you're doing that, then you're adding to the problem. And the white knight, they think that they're doing themselves, you a favor. But sometimes, and this is the white knight part, they have a narcissistic view of you. They might even think you're incapable of solving your own problem, so they're going to come in and do it for you. Now, that's not a very flattering view of you, is it? No, it's not. Because you could probably handle your own problems. And then there are those who will take advantage of the white knight. The white knight is unknowing. He's unwittingly being duped into being in this experience. I don't want to necessarily call it a relationship. I mean, it is. But they're duped into being in this experience. And this could go on indefinitely. I mean, you need help to get out of a situation like this. It's dysfunctional. And that's a word that you'll probably hear if you've ever been in therapy. You'll hear the word dysfunctional a lot. It's the D word. If you understand this, and beneath all these issues of self-worth, oftentimes, like you say, it happens from being abandoned. And, you know, in order to protect the feelings, and I'm talking about the white knight, they involve themselves in a relationship in which they think they're building a love bond, and you know, they're creating an emotional debt from the person that they're serving. And they think that person is going to repay that debt. But quite often, they wind up being abandoned. So the white knight goes right back to where he started. He's going to find somebody else. Well, they should find a therapist. Another something I'd like to cover has to do with, I'm principally talking about a relationship between a man and a woman, but it is where the woman is the primary breadwinner. And now this is made possible because women actually are enrolled in college, percentage-wise, more than men. So that means women graduate from college at a higher rate, and women move into the workforce. They earn a very substantial living, and they're meeting partners, some of them in college. And the roles that traditionally existed where the man was the breadwinner, the man brought the money home, made the decisions about the money, these things start to blend. Now, when you have the partnership, man and woman, both working, husband and wife, and the decisions about the money get made as a couple, that's fairly common. But let's take the reversal when you have the woman as the primary breadwinner and the husband stays at home. The masculine role that used to be played by the guy, by the man, has now shifted. And it's how do we make this transition? What's expected? Because what I have heard, now this is again talking to women who've had men in their life who have been, say, stay-at-home guys. Their participation in the relationship, the willingness to participate in the decision-making has fallen away. The volunteering for things to do in the relationship, it just, and for some, it's almost non-existent. I mean, I've known of cases where the man just basically became depressed and didn't get up off the couch. When you have a woman that's the primary breadwinner, so to speak, or income earner, then the job of the male in this experience then becomes of, what am I supposed to do? How do I become part of the decision-making process? Because now I have my traditional role, what I have grown up to understand, has been upended. And that becomes a source of relationship strain. I don't doubt that when women grow up, those that experience fathers who have been very instrumental in their lives expect to find a mate who is capable of doing the same thing. But when you earn more money, or in the case of many of these relationships, he's become a stay-at-home dad, then the male role, it gets blended. And it's no longer about being the dominant person in a relationship, but again, it's the shared power. Or I can say again, but it's the shared power in a relationship. And these things have to be discussed. I'm real big on communication, as I've shared in other topics that I've talked about. If you're a man and you're in this situation, you know what I'm talking about. It's hard to be assertive because quite often these women who are in relationships where they're their primary income earner have learned a certain level of aggressiveness, assertion, if you will, but that's because of survival. It's not to emasculate a man. But I think what women have to understand who are in these sort of role shift, role reversal kind of relationships is what emasculating a man is. It's cutting him out of the process. It's when you don't acknowledge his value and thereby dismissing him and maybe not even realizing that's what you're doing. But you have to give onus to the fact that it's a struggle. Because what young men grow up seeing in images of movies, television, so on and so forth, is an old idiom. It's the idea that men are in charge of things and that men will always be in charge. Well, this job of then being the nurturer shifts from the woman to the man. And while he may have had experiences of living that in his life with his mom or sisters. Now he has to bring that to fruition in the relationship with his significant other. And it may be easy to do for a while. When you have kids, you have a purpose. But what happens when the kids grow up or they're gone? What's the role then? It's not so clear. What I know is that these situations lead to confusion, depression, divorce, and it's how do we fix it? One must first recognize that there is a problem, one that's brought about because you've never seen something like this before. We are now dealing with these kinds of things and out in the open, but there is hope. Now that we recognize that a problem exists, you can now begin to work on the problem being of the role reversal. How do we manage this situation so that we have containment, so that we can both doing it in a loving way, and for a man not to feel emasculated? I think decision-making should be a shared experience. Continue to do that. Continue to emphasize that you're both important to each other. And there's always help for a relationship if you want it, be it your clergy, be it your professional therapist. I don't always suggest that friends weigh in on something like this because this is obviously deeply personal and they may not have had your experience. I always want to be encouraging of those that want to deal with their problems honestly and openly. You've been listening to John Johnson. This is the Golden State Media Concepts Relationships Podcast. You can find us at www.gsmcpodcast.com, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And you can download us on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud. Until next time, keep having those wonderful relationships.